thank you, starting with our meeting, and I want to greet all members who are here and welcome the Office of the Civilian Secretary. Our public members who are here, media. We are dealing with an important process, which is conducting hearings on annual reports. We had 4 days of engagement with the Department of Police. And out of that, we managed to produce a report with recommendations, which we adopted on Friday. And I think one really has to congratulate the members of the Portfolio Committee for being able to just do exactly that. Today, we're meeting, like I've indicated, the Civilian Secretariat of Police. But maybe before I just move on with the meeting, can I please once more, even in this meeting, request members to please confirm their attendance of this day's conference, because some have confirmed, others have not. For now, I have the name of Reverend Mishu, the chairperson, Honorable Annelies. Yes, we do have. Honorable Greg, I don't know whether... Thursday, 28. Lichetto, are you attending? Honorable Lichetto, not. Honorable Angie, are you attending? It's a conference on DNA. Yes. It's in Pretoria. We have to go there and come back because we have a meeting on Friday. We're meeting CETA on Friday. You can't. Oh, okay. So yes, it's those, Mr. Swart. Will it be possible or not? It's not possible. So you're not attending. Okay. So it's Honorable Lulek George, will you be attending? You're not. Okay. It's the conference in Pretoria on DNA. It's on Thursday, and we have to go in there and come back. It can't be possible. So it's myself, it's Honorable Annelies, it's Honorable Craig, it's Honorable Madibat, and Reverend Nation. So it's part of us that have confirmed. We will not add any other name after this because we have to confirm. But maybe just the... Okay, the rest we'll discuss afterwards. Thank you very much for that. We'll have to really bring notes. It's quite a good workshop. If you check on topics, it will definitely assist us as we prepare for our trip to UK, and that is why we think it's important for us to attend. There was one here in Western Cape on that this week was this day, Friday and Saturday. So, thank you very much on this one. The Secretariat appeared before the Portfolio Committee at the beginning of this year to table its budget. And we listened carefully to what they said they would be doing during this current financial year. But today we're not just about this 2010-2011 financial year. They have got to account for what happened during 2009-2010 financial year. We appreciate many of the important steps that have been taken to correct some of the many serious concerns that the Portfolio Committee had. However, unless the secretariat will be able to explain to the portfolio committee the report that is included in the sub-annual report is not talking to targets at all. It is just a report. So we're not sure as to whether you managed to meet any of the targets set by that office, whether with the current secretariat or former acting secretariat or whatever. It makes it very difficult to understand as to whether to say you've achieved, you've not achieved. Good, as we'll appreciate that you managed to convene, say, five isn't, but we don't know as to how many did you want to convene during that period. So did you meet your target or did you not meet the target? The information underneath is quite important, but it would have been even more appropriate if we were actually informed in the report as to whether targets indeed were being met and so on. We indeed appreciate the manner in which you have accounted for your budget as such. I think it is more clearer than ever before. But like I'm saying, what is actually missing in this report and clearly missing are targets, whether met or not met. Having said that, let me again allow the secretary to lead us with the presentation. And following that, we are going to let members to ask questions. But really, being the chairperson, can I please this time abuse that power before I allow the secretary? This is really abuse of power. On Saturday, an NGO called Gift of the Givers, together with somebody called Mr. Gina and his wife, Chris, they visited two very rural farm schools and handed over the Gift of the Givers. They handed over two uniforms per child. And in one school, it was about 80 children, farm school. And in another school, it was about 160 children. And each one of them got two uniforms. And even if this is an abuse, but I think it's something that should be appreciated. This Mr. Gina, together with his wife, is Chris and Dale. They have decided to adopt one of those schools. And I'm talking about a real rural school, which if you visit, you wonder as to how those teachers managed to teach under those conditions. And they started by building beautiful toilets because they did not have toilets. So the school now does have toilets, and they're intending to assist them with the building of classrooms, which they don't have. And I think it's something which, of course, not part of our committee, but it should be appreciated. I attended this. It was really heartening, and really we appreciate such initiatives which people out there, we may not even be knowing, are taking in order to better the lives of other people. I'm just abusing my position as I just make these comments. That was around Carolina area in Mpumalanga province.
Thanks, Chair. Just before I start, I'm accompanied by, they will just introduce themselves, the Parliamentary Liaison Officer from the Secretariat, the Office Manager for the Secretariat, who actually works in the Secretary's office trying to make sure it's a bit more efficient, the Head of Policy and Research, the Head of Partnerships, the Head of Support Services, and the Head of of Human Resources. They'll just introduce themselves briefly. Just to apologize for the Head of Monitoring and Evaluation, there is an inquiry into something related to that unit, and she's been asked to work on it so that we have a written response by Friday when we get back to Gauteng. But I'll just ask you briefly to just introduce yourself.
Good morning, members. My name is Irvin Kinnis. I'm the Head of Policy and Research.
Muthupi, Office of the Secretary.
Sam Mawate, PLO.
Good morning, members. My name is Amichan Soman, Support Services Secretary.
Lecturer Saroka from Human Resource Management.
Good morning, Honorable Member. To my well, Head Partnership.
Thanks, Chair. Just in terms of introduction and referring specifically to the comments with regard to the targets, just to be clear, the budget that was presented to the Portfolio Committee on the 23rd of June 2009, it basically was before there was a process to begin to restructure the Secretariat, and I think the Portfolio Committee will remember that when we presented on the previous annual report at the same time this year, last year, we said that we would be basically, that the targets wouldn't necessarily stay the same. However, having said that, I'm going to briefly go through the presentation, but most members would have received it, and just highlight certain areas, but then I will also go through some of the things that were presented in June 2009 and just highlight where the targets were met and where those targets were changed. So that it addresses the issue of what targets were not met. I think that just in terms of the introduction, that a huge amount of that essentially we can break the period up into two periods. The period before September 2009, which was still under the previous way in which the Secretariat operated, and then the period from September 2009. With the significant bulk of the work happening in the period from September 2009 onwards. I think the reason for that is that there was an acknowledgement that there was going to be changes to the Secretariat, but nobody was really sure what those changes were going to be. What we did try to do was to align that budget to the reorganization and restructuring of the Secretariat. If you look at page 3 of the presentation, I'm not going to go through the vision and mission, but it has changed slightly from what was presented in June 2009. This is the same vision and mission that was presented to you in January this year in terms of the reorganization of the Secretariat and when we presented our budget for the current financial year. The same applies to the objectives. They are, again, different to the objectives that were presented in June 2009. That is because of the reorganization of the Secretariat. These are also the same objectives that are now listed in the intro to the bill. Just in terms of looking at the budget expenditure, in 2009, the budget was 22 million. The amount that was spent during this period was 77% of the budget, which is basically just under 17 million, and the underspend was just under 5 million. In terms of that underspend, there were specific reasons for that underspend. Firstly, the majority of this budget was spent September 2009. I think that with the changes that people anticipated, there was very little activity that was taking place in the Secretariat before September 2009. But also in addition to that, if one goes back to the previous budget that was presented to you under the corporate branding, there was an amount of 3.9 million. In fact, it's not actually 3 million, it's 3.9 million that was allocated. Now, when we actually looked at that, that was actually to fund a five-day soccer expedition, so that where the Secretariat would have a store at the soccer ex, and it was going to cost us close to 3.9 million, and that's what they were referring to in that grant. Now, at that time, we felt that after September, when it came to to the Office of the Secretary's attention that we were going to spend $3.9 million on a four-day soccer exhibition. It was decided after discussions that actually that was not a valid excuse to spend $3.9 million on. We then said that, secondly, there were two reasons. First of all, it was not a valid expense, and secondly, if anybody was to put up an exhibition, it would be better that it was the operational arm of SAPS. That if with the World Cup coming up, it would be more effective to showcase SAPS as an operational unit rather than the Secretariat of Police, which is a civilian oversight. We then referred that matter to the National Commissioner's Office. He also felt that the expense was unwarranted for a four-day expo, and that they already had significant plans in place to showcase their operational support. So that then meant that money was not spent. And initially the plan was to put that money into developing our data system for the monitoring and evaluation unit. But when we had discussions with ISM and CETA, it became clear that we wouldn't be able to spend it in that financial year because of tendering processes and other processes that had to be followed. So so of that 4.978, in fact, it's not actually 3.9 of it was actually for SoccerX. In addition to that, that means that our underspend, if you take that 3.9 out, if you take the $3 million out, which was what the initial cost we were given for it, it means that we were underspent by $1.9 million, which is 9% of the budget. You'll see a bit later in the report that if you take that money, if you look at the budget for 2003, it was presented in June 2009. There are two areas where we were significantly underspent, and you'll see it comes up later. The first is that we had budgeted $232,000 for overtime expenditure, and we basically decided after September that we were not going to just allow staff to claim overtime for work done. If they couldn't get their work done during office hours, they would have to explain why they couldn't get work done during office hours. So essentially, strict prohibitions were placed on overtime work during that period, and the only people allowed to claim for overtime were the messengers and drivers, who really had no control over what time they were requested to work. And then under very special circumstances, for example, when we had job applications and we had huge number of job applications that had to be captured, we approved overtime to capture those job applications on the system. But the general process in the past of anybody just deciding that they were going to work weekends and claiming for it was actually stopped. And that doesn't necessarily mean that some of the senior managers didn't work weekends, but they were no longer necessarily claiming. So instead of our budget of 2.32 for overtime, we actually ended up spending $52,000 on overtime. So that would also account for the underspend. The other area of underspend is that if you see in the budget that was presented in June 2009, to this portfolio committee, there was an amount, $779, allocated for purchase of equipment for the secretariat. That equipment, a significant amount of that equipment was purchased in 2009-2010 financial year, particularly with the reorganization of the staff and new staff coming on board. However, the new SAP system is that money comes out of ISM's budget, as it's no longer, each division no longer has to pay for that equipment themselves. It comes out of the central ISM budget. So that $779,000 was actually not utilized. It doesn't mean we didn't purchase equipment. It just means that SAPS didn't bill us for that equipment as they had done previously in previous years. So if you take that into account, it's probably even less than 9% to underspend. However, and that's slightly different to previous years, where the last financial year it was a 29% underspend, and that included the $4 million on the SoccerX that was spent during that time. If you look at the breakdown of the expenditure, the Office of the Secretary, obviously between September and November, because most of the actual units only came into the partnership unit came into existence in November. The Policy and Research Unit as a structured unit came into existence in January, and the same with monitoring and evaluation. So a significant amount of work between September and the end of the year was actually being carried out through the Office of the Secretary, which is why the Office of the Secretary's expenditures were much higher. Then with the partnership and policy and research being the second to spend significantly. But just to point out that under policy and research, one of the expenditure also relates to an overflow amount from the CSVR report that was commissioned in 2007-2008, and that report was completed in April 2009. And there was a final amount that had to be paid to CSVR, which accounts for why policy and research, which shouldn't necessarily be your highest cost driver, actually was higher than your monitoring and evaluation for that period. And then that 52,000 that I've spoken about in terms of overtime, that comes out of the support. So it's in blue because it's in addition to the 2.783 that was spent on the support services. I'd also then just like to while we're dealing with the expenditures, refer people to Annexure A on page 24, which gives a breakdown of overtime goods and services, transfer and subsidies, and personnel expenditure. And to say that our personnel expenditure was over budget in terms of what was budgeted during the 2009, when we presented the budget in 2009. The reason for that overspend was, and I think we had raised this with the portfolio committee when we had presented to them, was that we wanted to develop the internal capacity within the Secretariat. A significant amount of our work relies on developing the internal capacity to conduct the work, as opposed to contracting work out to other people. So with regard to developing that capacity, we appointed additional to structure, 3 chief directors to head up each of the units, and the Secretary of Police position was upgraded, and that accounted to a large extent for the overspend in personnel. Also, we were trying to fill certain key vacancies. There's some vacancies which you'll see in Annexure B and C that we haven't filled. The reason for not filling them is because they are at quite a low level, many of them, and with the reorganization of the Secretariat and the final organizational development, which is now with the Minister of Public Service and the Minister and our Minister for approval, we didn't want to employ people at a lower position and then have to look at their positions later once the Secretariat has been reorganized. In terms of the Office of the Secretary, the reorganization, I think the Portfolio Committee is quite well aware of what has taken place in terms of the reorganization, starting with the work study that was done by Deloitte and Touche and now with the DPSA. Just to point out that the work study and skills audit by Deloitte and Touche was done as part of our partnership agreement with the business community, so there were no funds paid to Deloitte and Touche for the work that they did during that period. They did it as part of the MOU agreement with us. Then the second bullet point under that is the emphasis that we have placed on performance management as a tool to manage the Secretariat. And that has been a strong emphasis of the Secretariat, is to actually make sure that we put in place proper performance agreements with staff and that we use those performance agreements as a monitoring tool. In terms of the alignment of provinces, we overspent on this in relationship to what was agreed to in the 2009 budget presented to Parliament, and that was largely because of the process that we were engaged in with the HODs and the different departments in terms of trying to align the work of the provincial secretariats with that of the civilian secretariat for police. In terms of consultation workshops, this was part of the reorganizing process. We held 4 workshops with civil society groups, unions, CPS, etc., on the reorganization of the secretariat and our policy approach to that reorganization. On the legislative issues, They were in the report presented to you under the legislative issues. There were two targets. The one was the drafting of the amendments to the South African Police Service Act, and the second was the SARA bill. However, the Police Act has now been scheduled for next year. A task team has been established, but it's not a minor amendment to the Act. It's a major overhaul of the Act, and that is now on the program for next year. And with the SARA Act, that was initially supposed to come to Parliament this year, it's now going to come to Parliament next year. So those two targets were not actually met. However, the following did occur. So was the establishment of a legal team to draft the Civilian Secretariat for Police Bill, and working with the ICD on the drafting of the IPA Bill. In addition, we facilitate the facilitation of minimum standards for the CIT operations, where we had workshops, etc., with a number of different role players to develop those minimum standards, which are now in the process of being put into regulations. We had a series of consultations on SARA and the training regulations, and Mr. Soman will be able to talk a bit more to that. And then we facilitated guidelines on the firearms compensation. So the targets that were set there were not met. However, these were what were worked on in terms of the legislative area. In terms of a new area of work for us, which is something which wasn't really a target under the previous, is the international work. And certainly in terms of our policy development, we liaise quite extensively with the UN about their civilian oversight models to help us in developing that policy. In terms of support to the minister, the targets set in 2009 are pretty, they don't really go into, they just say support to the minister's office and policy advice to the minister's office. Our role in terms of supporting the minister's office has become much greater in terms of facilitating the MINMAT meetings and developing the agendas, consulting with the provinces around that MINMAT. Briefing documents for the minister, and I think we prepared more than 30 briefing documents for the minister on a variety of different issues, ranging from reviews of reports being submitted to certain legislative issues, facilitation of the crime stats release, assistance with systems and processes in the minister's office. We have been assisting, our support services have played quite a significant role over the last 8 months, or certainly since September, in assisting the minister's office with putting in place effective processes and policies, facilitating cooperation between the department and business associations, which has ultimately led to signing an MOU signing between the South African Police Service and the business community through Business Against Crime South Africa, where the business community are actually offering to use certain expertise to assist SAPS with things like fleet management, etc. The handling of complaints specifically referred to the Secretariat by the Minister of Police, but also from certain members of Parliament. And then the strategic planning, that what we focused on, and I think we reported this in January when we presented to the Portfolio Committee, that we basically would wait till the legislation had passed before we did our five-year plan. And we are now in November going into our strategic planning for, it will be 4 years because we've already missed a year. And that what we presented to the Portfolio Committee was an annual strategic plan and APP budget for 2010-2011, which was approved by the Minister before presentation. Other areas of work was the firearms issue, the preparation of the amnesty declaration and planning communication plans around that, consultation with role players and stakeholders regarding the amnesty. And in particular, we consulted with a significant number of gun owners, and it was for them the first time, I think, in a long time that there had been such an engagement. That engagement has subsequently led to additional processes which fall into this financial year, where we have been involved in seriously looking at how the CFA, the Firearms Control Act, is being administered, preparing reports to the Minister on the amnesty process, and follow-up meetings with role players and stakeholders to discuss weaknesses and gaps in the implementation of the Firearms Control Act. In terms of the Izimbizo, which are now, Mr. Zima will say, are given a different name, the report presented to you was that there would be fire and beetles and isn't beetle, and that occurred in the areas listed there. One of the things we tried to do with a number of them was not to just have a one-off meeting, but to go back and look at some of the issues that had been raised, and that was one of the key roles of the Secretariat, was to not just attend those meetings and then that's the end of it, but to actually begin to look at some of the issues that were raised and how we could follow up those issues. I've spoken about the formalization of agreements with business associations to assist the department in combating crime. In terms of the partnership unit, maybe Mr. Zimor, you can just quickly take people through the partnership area.
The Secretary has spoken on the issue of is in danger. We are taking forward in the current financial year that process by involving the police stations and working with the CPF. Even this past weekend, we were at Kailisha looking at the detail of those issues. The other issue is around our involvement with the business associations who are working closely with the BAC. And in our view, we've got quite a good working relationship. The National Commissioner has signed on the Memorandum of Understanding between BAC and the service, and that also involves aspects that have got to do with some work of the Secretariat. Honourable members, we've also been consulting with the communities in the rural areas of our country, particularly those mostly affected with the stock theft in the Free State, Matatiel, and KZN in particular. We are also working together with the provincial departments of safety in Free State, the Eastern Cape, as well as KZN, and we are planning to convene at this stage a national meeting. That process at the moment, which is at a stage where we are making a proposal to the Secretary to see if we can't have that matter discussed by MINMEC so that we develop a national approach in dealing with that issue. It also appears that, in essence, what started as stock theft, people in those areas are now saying it's not stock theft, actually, it's stock robbery, because people just come in there, even if you've got your livestock in your crawl, and they point firearms at you and they take it away from you. They no longer steal it in some instances. It also appears that there is some organized crime component involved there, in that there are reports that people who live in those areas feel that it's not only stock theft that's happening or stock robbery, but people, particularly along the Lesotho border, are beginning to deal in firearms and so on and so on, and we're also trying to then involve the police, the intelligence. At this stage, we had also agreed that we should involve our High Commissioner in this group. That's under the consultation with the rural community. Honourable members, again, we've interacted with the board, the CCF board, and we've accepted that we would need to develop some policy, which would then have to be broad consultations, including with members, because in essence, as honourable members know, CPFs are not functioning well. If one interacts with the provincial board, the picture is different. It's sort of toned down. It's like things are okay.
But immediately we go down to policing areas, we find that the situation is actually, in our view, desperate. It's very, 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 very bad. And besides the issue of policy, we still need to, again, we had a meeting this weekend on Saturday with some of the local people in Nyanga and so on. We think that we'll have to develop some emergency measures to deal with these things, including training and so on. But one could point out, honorable members, that one of the other factors that the people on the ground, CPS, have pointed out is that it's difficult to extricate the political aspect from the establishment of a CPS. One police officer also said, as they convened this meeting, sometimes the people who come to elect the people who will be represented in the CPS actually do the ordinary lobbying and caucusing that's done in political organizations. So in a sense, there is a political expression in the constitution of what otherwise should just be a neutral process of crime prevention and so on. And we then think that the issue of developing a policy should also begin to address those issues. The interface, honorable members, interaction was useful insofar as the firearms amnesty is concerned. In the past, in our past report, we briefly touched on this thing. For instance, the Shembe Church did indicate to us that they think that within their church, there are many people who were involved in the past activities during the struggle for freedom and so on, and they do think that some of those people, they say that some do confide that they still have got weapons hidden and so on, and that if we could be able to establish an ongoing relationship with them, perhaps we might also be able to uncover some of the caches and so on. The issue on slide 13, honorable members, is the issue around the reserves. The process around the enlistment of reservists into the ministry has sort of reached what we could call the tail end of it. We've received about 179 complaints, but then those would be people obviously who have been unhappy about the process. And in short, the major concern of what happens for those who are not accepted, the major issue is the psychometric test. And we think that matter then is a matter that should be resolved between the minister and probably we should have a discussion in terms of the content of what that thing actually involves, because we also don't know what the aspects of the psychometric tests are. But the majority of people who fail to be enlisted fail the psychometric test. Chairperson, I think that's it.
I just make a point on the reservist thing quickly. I think that the agreements which were reached were that we cannot completely lower standards completely in terms of recruitment into that. That there were certain criteria, and we would be happy to circulate to the portfolio committee the criteria that was approved in terms of the recruitment of that. There were certain things that were relaxed in terms of the age, not having to have a driver's license, and the issue of matric, and if it were, however, issues of criminal records, psychometric tests, were people felt that they needed, that we needed to keep those to ensure the integrity of the people we were recruiting. What Mr. Zemo is referring to, I think, is a bigger issue which we've now been asked to look at by the minister, is who are we recruiting into SAPS? What is the type of person? And we put them through these psychometric tests, But are these psychometric tests actually working? Because we still have some problems after it. So I think that's the issue that's being raised around the psychometric test. It's not to say we do away with it, but it's to say, is the type of test we're giving people the type of giving us the results we want in terms of the quality and the morale of the people we're recruiting?
Thank you, Chair. As far as the policy and research unit is concerned, we were responsible early on for the development and finalization of policies on the institutional reform in the Secretariat. As we said earlier, we needed to restructure the Secretariat if it wasn't to play its role of oversight and support of the Minister. We've also played a role in the institutional reform of the ICD. We've looked at the development and the finalization of a policy as far as the ICD was concerned and what changes needed to take place within the ICD. A policy was also developed on CIRA, Chairperson. We developed a draft policy on the institutional reform on the regulatory framework for the private security industry. We've worked on that particular policy and we've had engagement with CIRA. They're not very happy with it at all. In fact, we've just heard that they're considering going their own route and developing their own bill after our engagement. So that's something that's currently we must clear up with the Minister's intervention. And then we've also established a resource centre, Chairperson, where the resource centre is becoming an information hub within the Secretariat so that we're able to access documents, we're able to access any research report that we need and that we require, not only for the policy unit, but also for the Secretariat as well. And that is now up and running, it's operational. We've also played a role on the National Instructions on the Child Justice Act. We've been instructed by the Minister to become involved after, I think it was this Parliament and this Portfolio Committee raised certain concerns around the National Instruction and the Justice Portfolio Committee. And so we've become involved in working with SAP very, very clearly. We've developed a task team, which we chaired, to look at that National Instructions on the Child Justice Act. And that has now gone through to the Justice Portfolio Committee, and it was passed by Parliament. We've also established a civil society reference group, Chairperson. We think that it's important that we involve the academic community in the policy development process, and we've put some leading academics on that policy and reference group. We've had two engagements with them. We meet quarterly. We're about to enter our third one. And it's working well because these are very critical individuals. It's not people that are the independent thinkers, and they contribute to some of the debates around policing within the country and indeed internationally as well. The community safety forums, we've begun to develop policy guidelines on the establishment of the CSFs. And if you just explain what has happened, we've linked up with the DEFCOM committee of the JCPS cluster, and we're now also reporting at that particular structure, and we've set up a national working group to finalize that policy. We have the Department of Corrections, Justice and Constitutional Development. We have the police represented on that, and the Department of Human Settlements represented on that particular committee to finalize that particular policy. Our task team related to the Metro Police, we've established a task team to review the policy on the Metro Police, and we've attended a number of meetings on the Metro Police Chiefs Forum. We've done quite a lot of work. What we have not realized is the depth of work that is still required if there is going to be a single police agency. And this is going to take far longer than we think. And we've advised the Minister that it's going to take a few years in this particular regard if we're going to be finalizing anything. I don't even have to add.
Thank you. I just wanted to go back to then the targets, because I said I would refer back to our targets. In terms of what was presented in June 2003, the policy advice and development, we feel that through the policy documents that have been developed in terms of the I think one of the problems in the past with the Secretariat is all very well to develop policy documents, But if those policy documents don't impact on policy, there's very little point in developing those policy documents. So I think what the emphasis has been is on developing policy documents to guide legislative and other changes that need to take place within the police. So we had said that there would, I think they said there would be four policy documents developed, but we actually developed, in essence, three policy documents. But each, well, certainly the Secretariat and the ICD one, which was, the ICD one was developed in conjunction with the Minister's office, and we just had to channel that process through the final stages because in September there had already been significant discussion around it, but we drove those processes. In relation to SARA, as Mr. Kinnis has said, there is some difference of opinion around the policy document that has been developed. It essentially speaks to whether SARA should be, whether it is necessary to have an independent regulatory authority for the private security industry or whether there should be more direct state regulation. I think we're one of the only countries in the world, with the exception of the UK, that has a separate body to regulate the private security industry. And the question is, has that worked? Has that body actually been effective in regulating the private sector? So that's where the difference of opinion comes in between ourselves and SARA over the policy thing. I just want to refer to the research, to the resource centre quickly, and say if one goes back to the budget of 2009, there's a significant amount of money that is allocated in that budget for quarterly media analysis reports on crime. And in fact, it's an amount of $672,000 for that. That was to be commissioned out to somebody who would then provide us with quarterly reports. We stopped that in September, and in fact, our resource centre plays that role. So our resource centre, it doesn't incur costs, but our resource centre does a daily media analysis, sends it out to all the senior management and the secretariat. They receive a daily assessment of the media analysis by email, and that person is also in touch with exactly who is writing what in relation to crime, that resource centre. So we felt that it's not necessary to contract somebody out to do that, that becomes the role of the resource centre. So the target may have been met, the budget wasn't necessarily required to meet that target. Then just to go through monitoring and evaluation because of the absence of the chief director there. The unit has been policy research.
I just couldn't catch what you're saying. You're actually saying should we have an independent private security industry authority or you said or, I didn't hear what you're actually saying there.
Yeah. What I was saying is at the moment you have SARA, which is an independent regulatory authority. It's a public entity. It's appointed by the minister, but essentially functions independent from the minister. So the council is responsible for the functioning of SARA. The minister is responsible for the appointment of the council, but the conditions under which he may intervene in SARA are very stringent in terms of the law. The question is, do you need an independent regulatory authority? Because that's essentially what SARA is, or should that regulation be brought into the state? And should the state itself not regulate the private security industry? And I think that's the issue for us, is looking at international models where it's only the UK that has, and they followed our model. The UK followed our model that has a independent body that regulates the private sector. Everywhere else it's actually the state itself that is responsible for that regulation. So I think that's the difference of opinion between ourselves and SARA on the issue. In terms of the monitoring and evaluation unit, as I said, like policy and research, it was established in January 2009. One of the first things it had to do when it was established was to work on the firearms amnesty process. And I think for us this was an important lesson because what we did was we started to work with the provinces on the issue. So the national team that was developed was fine, but a lot of the work was actually carried out by the provincial departments who became part of a national structure monitoring the firearm amnesty. We had training for them and we had a very clear, almost monitoring tool that they used for the firearm amnesty. What that meant was that we were able to reach, in that three-month period, 240 stations that were monitored for that during that firearm amnesty process. The approach was not just to monitor and be able to report that there were problems, but to try and intervene as problems arose. So as there was lack of clarity at those stations, we immediately elevated that to a national level, and instructions were sent out to clarify. I'm not saying that we necessarily dealt with everything, but certainly at those stations, we did try where possible to go back and see that those situations had been rectified. We also received a number of complaints, even some from people in the portfolio committee. The other area was the National Monitoring Forum that we have established, and that that was really something which speaks both to the alignment of provinces, but was also something that was a carry-on from the amnesty process that was set up, where we now have each province's monitoring and evaluation unit meets with our monitoring and evaluation unit. And we have now just recently aligned our APPs with their APPs so that we're very clear on that we will be doing very similar, that they will be doing very similar monitoring exercises to ourselves. One of the big issues within that has been the development of a standardized tool. It's taken quite a lengthy debate and discussion with the provinces because each province had their own tool. And there's been a lot of discussion about coming up with one centralized tool for the monitoring and evaluation. We have also taken some of the areas that have been used in the parliamentary tool as useful areas that we need to also look at including in that tool. We've established a team comprising of CETA, ISM, and the Secretariat to establish an IT monitoring database. It's all very well if we establish this national monitoring forum and we start engaging the provinces in doing some of the monitoring work at a local level. But if we're not able to capture and utilize that information, it's going to be a pretty useless exercise. So one of the key areas is an IT system where the information will be able to be fed in, and we'll be able to generate effective reports around that. There's also been the establishment of a reference group for the monitoring team. However, one of the things we have had to do is this reference group was established in the first part of this year, so within this financial year, but we've had to really seriously relook at that reference group because I think one of the problems with that reference group is it firstly didn't engage with a whole lot of other people who are doing monitoring and evaluation work outside of the department. And secondly, its focus seemed to be a lot more on basically the JCPS outputs, which is important, but it also needs to look at other issues within SAPS, which are some of which have been identified over the last 2 weeks in Parliament. If one goes back to the output for that period, I just want to, in terms of the, it says that four reports on policy implementation by SAPS would be produced. During this period, if you look at it, there was we actually have produced four reports. We focused on four areas, not necessarily reports, because reports are not in themselves necessarily a solution to the problem. But we have focused on, obviously, the firearm amnesty process, the audit team, and I think the Minister has already mentioned that he will be making an announcement in the next month or so with regard to the audit on whether we have suitable people recruited in SAPS with regard to criminality. And the Minister, I think last week, spoke about that. In the next couple of weeks, he will be making specific announcements on that. The forensic issue was less of a report and more of an assessment and looking at a way forward in terms of the forensic area. And the other area was the docket analysis, which is also something which the Minister will be making announcements on in the very near future. So they weren't necessarily reports on policy, they were more reports on specific areas of SAPS. One of the things that we have identified, though, going forward in terms of monitoring and evaluation is that this unit has to be capacitated because this is basically the driving force behind the Secretariat. Even policy needs to be based on what is coming out in terms of monitoring and evaluation. And if you look at what has happened in the Portfolio Committee over the last 2 weeks, it's very clear that we need to up our game in terms of monitoring and evaluation so that those issues are addressed. And one of the things we would want to be doing is to take some of the areas that were identified by the Portfolio Committee and follow through on effective monitoring and evaluation of those areas. Then in terms of the support services, Just to say that our human resources management unit, I think they have been probably one of the units which has, I think, really had to work incredibly hard over the last period in terms of long hours, etc. The big focus has been on the reorganizational development of the secretariat and also on basically on the new appointments within the secretariat, and the third area has been the improving our performance management mechanisms within the secretariat. I just want to raise one thing in terms of human resources linked to our AP, linked to the report that was presented to Parliament in June 2009. We had allocated an amount of over 500,000 for training within the secretariat. Now, a part of that entailed not just training, but also paying for bursaries, etc. So part of it was training and a part of it was bursaries. Until September, there was a kind of moratorium placed on all training within the secretariat because people were aware there was going to be a restructuring process, but they weren't aware exactly what it would entail. So the training component of it, it would be useless to send people on training and then there would be a different approach or people wouldn't necessarily be in that position. Since September, we've spent a significant amount of time trying to match and place people within the secretariat. And so people have been moved into particular units. We've tried to look at where people's strengths are, and where their weaknesses are, and where they would best be suited within the secretariat. So in actual fact, we ended up only spending 90,000 during this financial year on training because of those processes. The majority of that 90,000 was spent on performance management training within the secretariat. However, as of this year, we have now started to significantly focus on training. So there's been, since the end of this financial year, there's been a significant emphasis now that we've kind of matched and placed certain people is to actually look at addressing their weaknesses through serious training. So that was one area where we didn't meet our target for those reasons, but that's what's happened subsequently. In terms of support services, other support services, the supply chain, the two areas that I think from our side are priority areas in terms of strengthening is the financial management and the supply chain management. The financial management within the secretariat, I think that one of the things we identified in September, October this year is that proper procedures and processes were not being followed in terms of the PFMA around all processes within the secretariat. Consultants and other people were at times being appointed without the proper procedures being addressed. Now, to some extent, our work has been made easier because we have basically said no more consultants. We have, over the last period, had two areas where we have agreed to use consultants. So one is consultants recommended to us by the DPSA to assist us with the whole performance management process and understanding that and helping us to understand how we best can use performance management. The other area of consultancy, which was a very small consultancy, was just to help us with the facilitation of the NGO civil society union workshop because we needed to participate and not just facilitate. Other than that, there have been no consultancies since the reorganization of the secretariat. That's made our work in terms of cutting down on things like the branding, corporate branding, refocusing where we spend money has made it a lot easier for us to have a greater control over how our supply chain management works. But we've also introduced very strict policies around following proper PFMA processes, and no post-factor payments are allowed at all within the process. But we are very well aware that one of the things that we have to do over the next 6 to 8 months is to strengthen our capacity within our finance section. It's one of the areas that within the organizational development and hopefully well, certainly by the beginning of next year because of when Parliament closes, we would be able to present to Parliament the approved organizational development design approved by both the DPSA and our Minister in line with the requirements of the new bill, but also in terms of the requirements in terms of reorganizing the secretariat, and finance plays a crucial function in that regard. In terms of the supply chain management, like finances, there's been certain shortcomings in intervention, lack of sufficient personnel, inappropriate structures, reliance on SAPS for approval, which means that people just will submit anything to SAPS, and if SAPS disapproves, it's fine, then SAPS takes the brunt of disapproving, whereas we need to make sure our systems are in place. It's been easy because SAPS are the people that approve or disapprove, and we need to address that. Reliance on SAPS system. I've spoken about late requisitions for procuring services being received, lack of sufficient personnel to address demand management, lack of updated asset register. So I've spoken a bit about some of the things we've done in this. What we've also done is we're well aware that one of the big issues in terms of government departments is their asset registers. So we put significant emphasis on the development of an effective asset register within the Secretariat, and we have now got an effective asset register system and have all our asset assets registered effectively on the PAS system. Then just to, if there are areas that I haven't included that were targets from the previous year, I think what we have done is we've spoken about the ministerial Isimbizo. The social mobilization that was raised in 2000 and in June 2009, that would include a lot of the basically that would include the stuff that has happened with that Mr. Zemo reported on, and it's been moved the engagements with interface, engagements with the business community, the post Isimbizo engagements. In terms of the strengthening of the CPF, I think Mr. Zemo has clearly identified that we have that if one looks at the targets, we were going to do leadership training and municipal engagement. However, we need to reorganize the whole way in which the CPF work. And just to provide leadership training in the current structure would not necessarily have addressed what we need to be doing around CPF. And the process around reorganizing the CPF has been quite an intensive process because it's not necessarily a process that is appreciated at all levels within the CPF. So there's had to be a lot of communications and engagements with them. So those targets were different. In terms of the reports on policy implementation, I've already addressed that. The SAPS Amendment Bill, I've already addressed that we didn't do that. We focused on the Secretariat and the IPID Bill. The CERA Bill, I've spoken about our policy document. And civil litigation was discontinued. We were strongly of the opinion that it's not the Secretariat's role to deal with civil litigation. It's actually SAPS's role. So, and actually SAPS must handle the civil litigation. What we will be doing going forward is to be monitoring how they handle the civil litigation. But in the past, we were actually engaging around the civil litigation. And that is no longer happening. So that was discontinued, so there were no targets met on that. Legal opinions to the minister. We had more than 30 opinions, but there were also specific legal opinions on firearms, the firearm declarations, the forensic bill, and the Child Justice Act. Policy advice, I think Mr. Kinnis has already identified our targets for that. The strategic operational research, I think with the exception of Metro Police, we haven't met our target in relation to that area because of all the restructuring that has taken place. Brand and ID corporate management, we already mentioned that we were going to discontinue this. And I just want to mention one thing to this portfolio committee, that in November last year, the safe in my office was so full that I needed to use the store, our strong room, to start housing some of the documents that needed to be filed in safe. And we went into our strong room, and it was based, and it was the first time I had been into that strong room, and it was piled with brand and corporate identity management stuff, pens dating back. I can't tell you how much stuff there was in there. There were something like 360 leather bags for referring to safety and security. There were supposedly corporate Christmas gifts that were supposed to be given to people that were never given to people. There were pens dating back 5 or 6 years. There was T-shirts that and umbrellas, and we basically took a decision at that point. We would make use of the pens for workshops, etc., even though they still said safety and security, but we would use them for internal workshops. We took an agreement that the bags, etc., you would send to orphanages to where school children don't have the ability to buy bags, etc. And that's the kind of thing we want to try and do away with. That doesn't build the secretariat. And that was an even stronger motivation from our side to do away with the branding and corporate identity management was one question's the effect of all of that equipment and how much was spent on that. The community liaison, I think Mr. Zimo has already addressed that in terms of our targets. The production of publications, our focus has been less on, I think that going forward in this year, we have said to the portfolio committee that we will have two papers produced in the academic journal, because that's important, because that's what people around policing read. However, in this period up to there, we weren't in a position to actually produce that. We are now in this year going forward in terms of those publications. But our emphasis is less on producing a nice glossy report and rather producing a report on which some sort of action will be taken. And then I think that we've already spoken about the media, and that we've moved that to the research centre. The personnel training, I've also spoken to our targets in relation to that.
Yes, thank you very, very much. Thank you very much. We are going to take questions from members. At 11 o'clock, we'll break for tea. And I think Ms. Kolapanat will be happy. She's definitely thinking that the person is now transformed. We'll break for tea at 11, but we'll take questions from members. We regard the secretariat as one of the important offices. According to your mission, you enhance the role of the Minister of Police, and that is quite a huge responsibility. We take questions from members. Honorable Ms. Annelies, Honorable Swate, Honorable Lekgetho, Honorable Angie, in that order.
No, apparently that's the seat for possibly the suspended members of Parliament. Thank you, Jefferson. Tia, I've got a couple of questions that I would like to ask. I just want clarity on the issue about you not getting billed for your computers. Did I understand you correctly? It's a system now. Don't have separate cost centres in terms of, and that goes for subs themselves as well, for the different divisions in subs. It's not related to this post, but I really think we should take note of that when we interact again with subs together with CETA. Because thinking about the problems we do have in terms of the buying of products, for subs, of goods for subs, it becomes a concern if they're not going to cost to specific cost centres the computers, the systems that they do buy. And then I think we need just to get clarity from them on why, what informed the decision and why are they doing that. In CIRA's annual report, and you've also referred to it, and if I'm putting the question to the wrong body, you must please stop me. But in CIRA's annual report, and you've also referred to it, you talk about the guidelines. Yeah, and training guidelines. Now, they clearly make it quite clear that you guys are not coming back to them in terms of a date, and that's why it cannot be finalised. And if that's the case, we've got to take serious issue with yourselves. So can you please give us an explanation on that issue? In terms of your legislative and legal capacity, can we get an indication of what the capacity is? Because I'm asking this question specifically, Jefferson, in line with what was said to us also in January, that the secretariat now will
most likely take over most of the legislative requirements in terms of subs. What I mean by that, if there's a change in an act or so forth, they would be responsible for drafting that to go to minister, for ministers' input, et cetera, et cetera. So can you just give us an indication, do we need to expect a growth in that section? Do you have enough people? What is the situation in regard to that? Then a question to Mr. Zimu. In terms of the reservists, you did indicate that most of the complaints are in regard to specifically the testing. But can you give us an indication whether there are, what's the second and the third biggest complaint that you get, and whether it impacts, I'm more interested to know whether it impacts on what's happening policy-wise or whether it's about operational, the way that SAPS interacts with reservists in that regard, if we can just get an indication in that regard as well. Chief, for the moment that is all, but I do have a few more.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much for a very good presentation that was done for us. I actually have three questions to ask, and then this question is for clarity. My first one is with regard to community safety forums. I just want to find out if there is a difference between how it operates vis-à-vis the community policing forum. Are they actually doing different work? And what is the difference? And another one is with regard to partnership in the slide number 12, where you indicated that the question of stock theft, and it was indicated that it is now being taken further. It is no longer a stock theft. Now it is stock robbery, because people are actually using guns forcefully to take stock from other people. So I just want to know, because you had this consultation, actually, what is the people actually thinking, or what could be done actually to stop this robbery, because now it has been taken further. And another one is with regard to the CPF. It was indicated that they are not actually operating well, they're not functioning well, depending on the levels that those CPF are operating. And it is also indicated that, it was also said that most of this community policing forum can't dissociate from political pressure from the community. So I actually want to know if that is the case, what is the Secretariat actually intend to do? Because that's apparently what is actually happening. In most cases, when you go to community policing forum, especially when we have to elect people and politics to come in there, and actually it changes actually the whole intention of the CPF, and if that's not addressed, actually, it's going to create a very serious problem. So I just want to know, because we have been having some meetings with the board, how do you intend to change that perception? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also thank you for the presentation. We learned as a committee of stock robbery recently when we visited KwaZulu-Natal in Escort. We met with the chief and other people there. I wish that you visit that area. So painful how the people take the stock of the communities around that area. Let me also thank you acknowledging CPF not functioning well, and you are doing something on that. As a committee, we will be observing that. Over the weekend, when I was in my constituency, we had a lengthy debate with one of my community members there around the issue of reservists. I just want to check with you how many reservists we have now. Do these reservists, when on duty, put uniforms and firearms just like police officers? I also want to know, recently the commissioner talked about 200,000 that grant to every police officer. I want to check with you what happens if this reservist dies. When is he also benefiting from this 200? If not, why? I want to check with you this thing of them signing a disclaimer, a document that they sign and excuse the department from the responsibility that I'm doing this. If this happens to me, the department is not responsible. And I think we need to, if there is such a thing, to review that position. What are you saying on this? Thanks.
Thanks, Jefferson. Let me also thank the presenters on their wonderful report. Part of my question was covered by Honorable Leketo about the CPF. But my other one is on the alignment with provinces. The presenter made mention of overspending. Wouldn't it be better if maybe we were given a figure to say we exceeded by so much or something, just to have a feel of what is that overspending we're talking of? Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm going to ask all the questions I wanted to ask. If they want to ask us answer them, some of them this afternoon, I won't problem. The first one is the issue of there was in the report something like 7 staff members got annual bonuses. What could be the reason? Why did other staff members did not get a bonus? Is there a reason? Because to me it looked a little bit strange. But also in that same report it says inadequate training of staff members. Now the question is, who is responsible? Whose fault is that? Surely staff members are not adequately trained. Assuming that the, because it was my assumption, that the 7 who got, are the senior guys, why penalize those you did not train? If then you didn't give the bonuses because they did not get training. The other thing is the understanding. The secretary explained very convincingly why they have understand. He talked about the soccer acts and the issue of the overtime, budget for overtime. If the only part I'm interested in, that's number one, is how was this budget overtime budgeted that it created this problem? Because now it looks like it's besides the soccer acts. But my other question, Madam Chair, when we were dealing with the bill, said they were going to have to need more money from the National Treasury. The previous year they underspent by 8 million. Now they have underspent. How are they going to convince? I understand they could put the case that now they are a department on their own or they are an entity on their own. But how are they going to convince the the National Treasury that they deserve more money, as we thought, if there is this understanding which has been going on. So to me, I think that I would be very happy if they can explain to us. MENMEC meeting. I understand when they were part of the department. Just from my understanding, are you still going to organize MENMEC meetings in the light now that you are on your own? Because MENMEC meetings normally are organized from the minister's office. You see, now because all these things have got budget. Are you budgeting for MENMEC meetings, which, in my understanding now, at that time you were more at task. Now are you still going to be responsible, or is somebody in the office of the minister going to be responsible for organizing MENMEC? I think the question of rural has been all what I'm interested in, probably even not today. In your view, what is the plan? You might not give us today, Madam Chair, because that one, to me, I would be very very elaborate, because there's a big problem in terms of rural policy, especially in the villages. You saw for yourself when we're in KZN, but even in other parts of the country. Because sometimes the police station is there, it's very easy to report that here are thieves, they are stealing sheep now. Police take long. Sometimes you are told there is no van to come at that particular moment. Thieves are not going to wait for you. By the time the police, because that's a problem. By the time the police come, if they come after an hour, those thieves are gone. And like you are saying, it's robbery sometimes. If you are not armed, even if you see them, there's not much you can do. So that's why I'm saying, if you got a solution to this thing of rural, that's why I'm saying, even if you don't talk to us now, I'd be very happy to hear. Well, the CPF has been mentioned also, because I thought you stopped short. Probably this was not meant for that. As to say, what is the solution to this thing of CPS? Because all of us know that there are serious problems in the CPS. The issue of the reservists, there's a part which you didn't talk about. Recently, a number of criminal activities from the police, sometimes it's said the police criminal involved, and later it is established that that person was a reservist. What is the, because it's also got a funny situation in the police. In the military, reservists are not full-time. In the military, reservists are trained, they are full-time employees somewhere, they come at particular times for training. Of course, when they are going to go to DRC or when there's war, in the police, the reservists I see seem to be more to me full-time. That's why when they suspended reservists, I was one of the people who supported the police for that. Because either you employ police and employ them properly, because the problem with these reservists are not even properly screened. You see, recently, even in the case of the Pretoria rugby player, my rugby club, the Bulls, again, it's a reservist. That's why I'm saying. That's why I'm asking, do you have a solution as to how we deal with this issue of reservists in terms of making sure that if they come into the system, because also criminality, some of them even criminals come into the system. Do you have a plan in the issue of dealing with the reservists? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The CPFs, you obviously have been redefining and
and working on their role. But is there a deadline for the release of a final document? You know, when will we be able to see that? And then when is the date for the implementation? Because I think this is a long-awaited study. I'm also very relieved that you will be reviewing the meetings that we've been having over the weeks with the various SAP sectors that have appeared before us, and during which we have pinpointed, at times it was like pulling teeth, where we had people ducking and diving and finally admitting that, yes, okay, fine, they actually haven't trained the detectives, actually, yeah, but it was hard to get the information out of them. So I'm hoping that you will review what transpired during all of those meetings. I mean, there were many issues from the training, the supply chain management. I think I can't tell you how many times we have sat in committees. We've been told by top structures, everybody's got everything. They've all got bulletproof vests. They've all got firearms, they've got everything they could possibly want, and then you go to the first station and you find there are 70 bulletproof vests short, and the second one, and the third. I've got lists of them as long as my arm. So there was obviously always a total schism between the top structure, who really honestly believed that everything was rosy in the garden, and the bottom level. It was supply chain management. That's been, I think, one of the huge problems. So looking at that and the mess in relation to the police stations and the building or the not building, and all, I'm sure you're looking at all of these entities, the loss of the firearms, but are you mandated at all to suggest possible sanctions for members? I'm very concerned that we have year after year after year thousands of SAPS firearms lost. They couldn't tell me if it was perhaps the same member who lost a firearm every year. Is it just an additional income for them? And there is never anyone fired, thrown out of the SAPS for losing firearms. No one's held to account and no one pays for them. So I think at the very least, one would maybe look at asking you to see if it's not possible to say, this is your responsibility. It's strapped to your leg or it's in a safe. Those are your options. Unless it's taken from you at gunpoint, you actually do lose it, and I've yet to work out how that could be done, then you must pay for it. I think the taxpayers have had enough of supplying firearms at millions of rands, and they end up on the street. In relation to the rehiring of the SAPS members, look, the ad went out, and I certainly welcomed it. Thousands of people applied, and yet a very small handful have been taken back. Now, you know, they were SAPS members. They left for 1,000 different reasons. They all knew the very strict criteria you had to reapply. And now many of them are just emailing and phoning and saying it was all just a publicity stunt. Can you just shed some light on what happened? What was the thinking behind putting the ad in the paper only to dash the hopes of thousands of people who saw this as a way to get back into the SAPS? And then finally, you spoke of the decision, I don't know if it will happen next year, but you're looking at the reworking of the SAPS Act. Are there particular areas you're looking at to be reviewed, reworked? Have you workshopped it already? At what stage are we? And then are there certain areas that you believe that we will be needing to focus on? Thank you.
Sorry, Jaya. Just two more questions. I think if I can make a general comment here in terms of the report of the Secretariat, and I'm sure it's currently a cost center with Inception. Hopefully in future we will get separate report from the Secretariat with more detail. But I find it difficult the way the report is structured. And I would request that in future that you know, there are too many entities coming to Parliament who produce 20 reports per year, research, whatever, or have 16 imbeciles or whatever. You don't know the quality thereof and you don't know the impact thereof. And I think what would be helpful is that one can actually say this was the end result of what we have done. Following these five imbeciles, it resulted in us reviewing the following and adopting changes within SAP's procedures. Just an example of following the research that we've conducted or the monitoring and evaluation of this specific aspect, it resulted in the following changes. Or it confirmed that the way things are done is the correct way that it's done, so that we can have an outcome, quality outcome to measure as well. It's just a general comment that I would like to make in that regard. Secondly, I think we said to the Secretariat when they came with this year's budget that the honeymoon is now over, and the honeymoon is over, but I also believe that we need to request deadlines on some of these things. For instance, the SAPS Act is an act that has been coming since the great-grandfather Mululeki George was chairperson of this. Honourable Mululeki George was the chairperson of this committee. And it's desperately needed, because the fact of the matter is we're still talking in such act of an interim constitution. It's based on an interim constitution. And I would like to hear the response to the question of the Honourable Kulabala, because in my mind, it's not taking sections of the act and focusing on it. It's an overhauling of the complete act. It needs to be overhauled so that it's in line, top to bottom, in line with the new constitution, because there are aspects where it's not in line with the new constitution. But that's the second point I want to make, deadlines. I think we need to have deadlines. And I think also, Chairperson, it would be very helpful from time to time, and I respect and accept the fact that not all reports can be made public, but I think the Secretariat mustn't undersell itself either. And I think if the Secretariat comes up with good reports that we as members of Parliament in this committee can benefit from the knowledge of those findings of the report. And if they find that it's not sensitive in nature, etc., it should be published. And I really think the Secretariat should look at publishing some of their works, whether it is in academic journals, whether it is as separate publications, or whether it is as a report, so that we can actually, that it becomes that transparent civil oversight body that it's supposed to be as well, because I think that would help a lot. Now, that brings me to my question as well. Communications. There is some sort of unclear some people are saying that the communications, because it falls under your office, if I'm not mistaken. But there are people that believe the communications are the partnership unit. Now, can you just explain to us so that we have the clarity in terms of the difference between the two, what it is? And then I'm not sure that you answered my question on the... I haven't answered any questions. Mr. George is sleeping and I'm... No, I'm not awake. I am really not... No, but just a question on the communications, if we can just get an indication whether the partnership unit is taking over that communication function, or because I'm worried if there's the discrepancy that people can actually think that's where they should go in terms of communication, and we can just get clarity on that issue, Chair. Thanks.
Yes, thank you very much. Where do you get your budget from? Where do you get your budget from? Because I understand, yes, it is from the administration program of SAP, but it doesn't appear anywhere in the ENE at all. No, the adjustment review, whatever. It's not anywhere. But it's money that SAP has to account for, because it is from their budget. But like I'm saying, I have here the ENE document 2009-2010. Doesn't appear. And why that? Probably one would be, one would ask. I think questions that I also wanted to ask, or issues that I wanted to raise, have been covered by members, but it is true that when it comes to legislation, it also affects our work. So it just cannot be legislation without time frames, as it has been said, definitely, because if you don't, as a matter of fact, when we bring those, we'll just say we've not accommodated them in our, on our program. So it will be important that we get those. I think the other issue I wanted to raise was the impact of some of your interventions, your imbizos, as for instance, what was the impact of that? That is my question, but I think the Honorable Analyst has covered it as well. The issue of reservists as well, I think it's at some stage it has to be clarified, and we have one thing that we agree upon when it comes to reservists. It can be moratorium this side, partially and fully, and this and that. I think we've got to agree maybe to have a definition of what a reservist in SAPS is and stick to that, and what its role in SAPS is, because it cannot be reservist, like I'm saying, somebody wants to be a SAPS, comes in as a reservist, and tomorrow demands to be a SAPS, only then that you're going to screen as to whether this is a criminal in any way. So you actually might be allowing criminals to be operating in our police station. So I think this matter has got to be dealt with and be finalized. I think those are the issues. One other issue I wanted to raise with you is with regard to strategic plan. According to the report, page 7, strategic plan and annual performance plan, are these referring to secretariat and not SAPS? They're for secretariat. I just want to ask that if you can, or they're for secretariat. Oh, okay. Because I was going to then link that to the comments by the Auditor General, but I think those refer to SAPS. Okay, right, fine. We are going to break for tea. It's quarter past 11. We'll break for tea. Come back at 22:12 and continue.
Thanks, Chair. I'll get some of my management present to respond to some of the questions. Maybe just to start off with regard to the question posed by the Honourable Member van Wyk and your Vice-Chair around the publishing of documents and how we report on things. I think that is something that we definitely need to start doing more of, and already Mr. Kinnis can explain that we've been speaking to a whole lot of different journals about having specific sections in those journals where we can focus on, and at the moment we're actually planning one particular special edition journal which will be largely based on stuff written by the Secretariat. I know that we would want to engage with you because they would also want an article possibly from the Portfolio Committee, but we certainly are engaging with different academic journals about doing that. I think that there's that, but then also something which we spoke about which maybe we haven't really done as effectively as we should have, and I think it was something which came up certainly in one Portfolio Committee meeting, I'm not sure when it was exactly, was the idea of being able to, even if we don't have time to submit report, to actually present reports to you, but things, for example, like the firearm amnesty, we should at least submit those reports to yourselves. So I think that's something that we need to, some of it we're paying attention to, others of it we need to pay a bit more attention to going forward. And I think definitely the question of saying that we shouldn't just report on the number of imbezos or is imbezo or the number of reports we've done, but look at the content. I think that certainly is something which we need to take on board, because it fits in line with what was said earlier. We don't want to just produce reports for the sake of producing reports, which is, I think, what has historically happened with the Secretariat. It's important to know what has happened with those reports. So, for example, if we're doing an assessment on the Central Firearms Registry, to be able to report back to you on what happened as a result of the assessment, rather than that we did the assessment and produced the report, but to look at the outcomes of those issues. That is something we would want to do going forward. In terms of the ISM ISM financing, that what Honourable Sanfake is saying is that's absolutely correct. That in the past, each division would be billed, would have a budget for IT or whatever else, and they would then, ISM would procure it on their behalf. Now, it seems that ISM are holding the whole budget. We have some concerns ourselves around that because it means that it becomes very difficult to track equipment. If each department has a budget and they have to account for what they've done with that equipment, it becomes much easier to track the equipment. If it's all housed in one central, what equipment's been purchased is all housed in one central budget item and one central registry, I think it becomes a real problem to begin to track it. So I know that when we first picked this up, we raised concerns about the fact that we should actually be... It also means that you can't possibly plan because you have to keep going cap in hand to ISM and request certain things as opposed to making sure that technology and ICT is part of your planning. So we also have similar concerns to what was raised with regard to that. In terms of the SERA annual report and the training issue, I'll ask Mr. Soman to talk a bit more about this, but we published the draft regulations during the year for public comment, the training regulations. We then received the comments back on those regulations. We compiled the comments into a single document and we circulated it to SAPS and to SERA. When we then went back to SERA and said to them, okay, now can we meet and discuss this, they actually requested that we wait because of their engagement in the World Cup. They actually said that they couldn't do it at that point until after the World Cup, that they couldn't focus on the training regulations until after the World Cup. So if there's something reported in SERA's report, it's not 100% accurate. We've got all the emails, etc., of those correspondents where we had requested to meet with them about the training regulations. And they came back to us with two things, and Mr. Soman can clarify on this. One is they wanted to delay it until after the World Cup because they didn't feel ready with all they were doing in the World Cup. And two, they had some concerns about their capacity to actually implement the training regulations. We've subsequently also gone back to them since the World Cup around the training, and Mr. Soman can report on his most recent discussions with them, but it seems unclear whether they now want to actually go ahead with those training regulations or not. So that's, Mr. Soman can add to that if he wants to just go through all the questions, then you can add. In terms of the legislative capacity, yes, it's absolutely essential. What we have done up till now is our capacity has been, we've actually relied on the Department of Justice, the state law advisors, to assist us with capacity around the legislative unit. In terms of our organizational design that has gone to DPSA for approval, there is provision for a specific legislative unit. So like policy, like partnerships, like monitoring and evaluation, there would be a legislative unit. It wouldn't necessarily be as big as the other three units, but there would need to be dedicated capacity for drafting, because I don't think we can continue to rely on the goodwill of people like the Department of Justice and state law advisors who have a huge amount of work on their hands to provide us with that sort of assistance. I'm going to the reservist issue. I'm going to let Mr. Zemo deal with it, except to say that there is a policy that is currently there were definitely serious problems around the reservists, how they were recruited in the past. People were recruited without following the same sort of procedures that normal people in SAPS have to follow in terms of recruitment, and that included checking of criminal records. I mean, some of the people that applied for reservists actually had criminal records, and that was never really picked up on. The issues of what uniforms they wear, what firearms they carry, what their duties are, the questions of all of that is now part of this new policy that is being developed around reservists, including the issue of disclaimers. And I think the focus is exactly what the Honourable Member George said, is it's actually not on... I think one of our biggest problems around reservists is that people saw it as a stepping stone to employment in SAPS. So people who were unemployed became reservists and then expected to be integrated into SAPS. And many of them, to be fair to them, were doing long, long hours. They were almost working as permanent SAPS members without being paid. Now, the emphasis is now on saying that the reservist system is about utilizing, similar to what the SANDF thing, it's about utilizing certain voluntary expertise, et cetera, and not necessarily becoming a recruitment base for SAP. And that's what the emphasis is now on in terms of the lifting of the moratorium. And there is, I mean, I think that the policy is now in place and people are starting to be recruited. Mr. Zemo can talk more about the figures and the complaints, et cetera, around the reservists, but essentially there were 3,265 people recruited permanently as a reservist out of a total number of 35,786 people. But Mr. Zemo can talk to that a bit further. We can give a provincial breakdown of that. In terms of the question about the HODs meeting and the overspending, the amount budgeted for the HODs meeting was 120,450, and the amount that was spent was 276,932.46, and that related to the fact that a lot of our HODs meetings over this time took the form of not just a meeting, not just flying up to Pretoria in the meeting, but it was actually where we had 2-3 days workshops slashing through different issues and different areas. Letty from HR can talk about the staff members' annual bonuses and relate to that. And also in terms of inadequate training, I think that as we explained earlier, that training shouldn't just be training. It's got to be matched to the job you're doing. And one of the key things we did was the matching and placing of people. So there's been quite a lot of people move from different sections within the Secretariat to other sections, and their training is now related to the work they're doing and the weaknesses that have been identified in those areas. In terms of the underspend, I think we identified when we presented last year's annual report to you, which was around the same time, that we were unhappy with the way in which the Secretariat had developed their budgets, that we felt that there were almost figures that were thumb-sucked as opposed to realistic figures being developed in all areas. And that what we tried to do when we presented the budget to you in January was to actually cost each and every item. So do preparatory work in preparing for that budget was to cost it. So if we're saying that we need a budget for the reference groups meetings, we actually costed what those meetings would and didn't just talk about a ballpark figure. And I think that in terms of how we're going to address Treasury on this, first of all, we've just had our six-month review of our APPs for this year, and it seems that we are going to be overspent this year in the 2010-2011 year, which I think is not necessarily unexpected. And we basically have already been discussing with SAPS the fact that they had made accommodation for possible overspending of the Secretariat, because if you look at the Secretariat's budget, it's minimal in terms of SAPS's overall budget. In terms of us requesting huge amounts of money for the bill, we don't see ourselves as going to Treasury necessarily and requesting a huge amount of money. The Portfolio Committee will be aware that we had asked that the clause for a designated department be suspended for a year to enable us to be ready for that designated department when it came into existence. Our biggest spend in terms of the implementation plan that we presented to you is around our personnel, our capacity building within the Secretariat. And that is already going to come into effect in the next year and will become part of SAPS's budget. And if you look at the amount that we said, and I can't remember the exact amount, but I think it was a couple of million, in terms of SAPS's overall budget, that's a very small figure of money, and SAPS have already said to us that they would be able to accommodate it within their budget. The other thing is, as certain functions move from the Secretariat to ourselves, they will move, I mean from SAPS to ourselves, they will move with that budget to us. So we're not necessarily anticipating that the passing of the legislation is going to require Treasury to put a huge amount of new money into the new department. It'll be more a question of reorientating SAPS's budget to accommodate certain functions, and that's something we're already in discussion with SAPS around that. In terms of the MinMet meeting, I think our role is not to when we talk about support to them in NAT meetings, we're not talking about booking venues and sending out a letter telling people they're invited to this meeting. That's the role of the minister's office. I think our role is the content of those meetings and making sure that those meetings actually are as effective as possible. And I think if one looks at the legislation, we put the MNMAC into the secretariat legislation, and we said that the secretariat will provide support for that MNMAC. And I don't think we're really talking about the kind of logistical support. It's more the kind of political, and I'm not talking about political in terms of political parties, but it's the kind of making sure that briefing documents are prepared and that the agenda is in, that it's those sorts of things which are not just technical issues. The rural safety issue Mr. Zemo will deal with, and he'll also deal with the CPF issues. In terms of the Portfolio Committee's BBR report, I think for us that is going to become a very crucial thing in terms of directing our monitoring evaluation unit going forward and how we focus on what's come out of the Portfolio Committee's BBR report is going to become quite crucial for our monitoring and evaluation unit. I think in terms of the possible sanctions that the Honourable Member Colabana spoke about, I think for us it's not that there aren't sanctions there. It's the ability to actually utilise the sanctions. And we want to look at that as both in terms of specific areas like firearms. I mean, I think that for us, the firearms issue, we've already started the first phase of our work around firearms, but firearms is a crucial area for the secretariat. In the first half, we focused on the amnesty. This next period, we focused on the central firearms registry, and the next process going forward is to look at how we manage our weapons as State Department. So I think we've looked at it in different phases. And we would be looking at sanctions that exist and why are those sanctions not being applied rather than looking at coming up with a new set of sanctions. And I think that applies to specific areas like firearms, but it also applies to a generic thing that we have been in discussion with around how does SAPS use its disciplinary, how is SAPS using the sanctions that exist to them at a generic level, not specifically to, related to firearms, but around a whole lot of different areas where we don't believe they are effectively implementing the internal controls and procedures that should exist within SAPS. In terms of the SAPS Act, I mean, I think that for us the issue isn't just a slight tinkering with the SAPS Act here and a slight tinkering with the SAPS Act there. It's a complete overhaul of SAPS. One of the things that we have said is that we want to go into a process, and that has started this year and it's already to some extent underway, is we want to look at a state of policing first, and that must also, because there are certain things in the SAPS Act that don't speak to the Constitution, that still refer back to the interim Constitution, but we also need to have, if we're saying that legislative changes need to be policy-driven, one of the areas that we're looking at is a comprehensive understanding of the state of policing, which would then be able to influence where we're going in terms of reviewing the SAPS Act. Our deadline for the SAPS Act is the second parliamentary session next year. We don't believe that rushing the SAPS Act is going to be very helpful. We believe that we need to do a very thorough job. What we have done is we've already set up a team to look at the state of policing and the policy issues around it. We are also in the process, we have already started to set up a legal team with between the National Commissioner's Office, ourselves, and we're wanting to bring in some specific external drafting experience in the process of that, and we feel confident that we will be able to present that act to Parliament in the second session of next year. And that's on the SAPS Act. The issue about communications and the difference between partnerships and communications, I think that there is a difference. When we talk about partnerships, we're talking about issues around social mobilization and outreach. When we're talking about communications, which is housed in my office, it would be, for example, if there are particular areas that we need to respond to at a public level as the secretariat, if we need to be able to communicate certain findings or reports, etc., that would be one of the roles of that communications. The reason why it would be housed in the Secretary of Peace's offices, because it would cut across all the different units, whereas the partnership unit is much more about social mobilization and building concrete, formalized relationships between the department and different entities. I think that Mr. Kinnis and Mr. Zemo will speak a bit more to the reservist and the CSS issue. And then just on the budget and SATs not reflecting the budget, this is an ongoing battle that we've been having with SATs about them reflecting our budget. I think for them, our budget is so minuscule. But I know that before the publishing of the annual report, we had a concern that they don't list us under that administrative section. And we raised that with them. We understood until we saw the final version that they were going to include it in the administrative section. But it is a serious problem for us, and I think it relates to the fact that they just see our budget as insignificant. When we've had discussions with them about, for example, possible overspend for this year, they were like, oh no, don't worry about it, you know, your budget is so small. And for us, that's a bit of an issue, because we need to be able to account cent for our budget. And if it's not reflected there, the AG, for example, doesn't have any relationship with our office except what we've established with the office, because he barely knows that we exist, you know, and that becomes a huge problem for us. But it's an ongoing battle that we're having with that, around that issue. Then I'll ask Mr. Soman and Letty first, and then Mr. Kinnis and Mr. Zemo.
This issue of budget, which you have adequately explained, but I'm just uncomfortable the way I understand the provisional arrangement now in this financial year, that they could be transferred from SARS to you. But I was talking, like you're saying, for instance, the SARS Act. You say you can only deal with it at the next second term next year, which means by that time you'll have your own budget. And that is why, to me, it's important to you, especially when it comes to make legislation. You see, you're right, SARS budget is big. So making legislation was a non-issue to them. But to you, it's going to be different. You are a small department with not a big, and for instance, legislation can cost a lot of money, especially big legislation. You still have to have CIRA Act. It's been outstanding for a long time. And you know the controversy that normally accompanies CIRA Act. We experienced it. It was bad, insulted in the air, and the chairperson at 4 or 5 days a week in the radios bombarded, because there are a lot of interest in the CIRA Act. So you're going to need a lot of, even before it comes here, a lot of preparation, consultation. For instance, the first time, it was just to turn back, because the department did not make a proper consultation. But I'm asking you, are you sure about your budget for making legislation? Not this year. This year, I understand you talk about transfers from SARS, but from 1st of April, unless you correct me, from 1st of April 2011, there will be no more transfers. You would have your own budget, so you would not look for any money from SARS.
We haven't yet presented to the Portfolio Committee, and it would probably be something, I know we normally present in January, the Portfolio Committee may ask us to present earlier our budget for next year, but it does take a lot of those things into consideration in terms of the amount. So it is, and our underspend, and this year, we actually overspend for precisely the reasons you're talking about. So really halfway through the year, we're anticipating a slight, not a major, but a slight overspend for this current 2010-2011 year. But in terms of us becoming a designated department with our own budget, the Portfolio Committee will remember that we asked to hold that for another year. That the rest of the Act would be passed with that clause coming into existence in 2012-13. And it was precisely for the reasons that you're talking about, so that we don't land up in that position at that point. know if that answers the question, but can I ask then Leti to respond to the issue of the performance?
Thank you, Secretary, honorable members. So in terms of the performance bonus, as the Secretariat is the cost center of staff, so in terms of staff policing, it was paid according to the level, and then it was budgeted for 20% per level. For example, if maybe it's 5 directors, that means only one director must receive an incentive, and then it was the procedure of each and every member must apply the performance bonus. And even if you qualified for the performance bonus, because of the percentage that was set for, so it comes to 7 members from the Secretariat who received the performance bonus. Not to say the members from the Secretariat were not performing. It's because of how the policy was developed from SAPS, as we are the cost center of SAPS now.
So maybe...
That's 7% of staff are given bonus. According to what you're saying, it's because of the policy of staff. How do you determine the, or you put them in a hat and shake, and how do you determine this 7? And also, how do you explain to these other people who also work? Because you see, the term performance bonus, it means performance. Now, you give it to me, you don't give it to this gentleman who just performed probably the same, like me, or better. How did you determine this 7?
According to sub process, honorable members, is that after the quarterly report, so each and every member who gets the ratings of 3 must apply the performance bonus. And then the committee was set, but it was budgeted for 20% per level. So if maybe from the Secretariat members, we do have 5 directors, from that 5 directors for level 30, that means only one member must get the performance bonus, irrespective of whether they do qualify or not qualify. So, and on the other side, it did reduce the morale of the performance of the Secretariat. Because of that thing, because I remember when I sent the email to the Secretariat members to apply the performance bonus, they said, lady, but it doesn't matter because even if we qualify at the end of the day, some were not going to receive the performance bonus because of the percentage that SAP said. So it was the SAP policy, not the Secretariat.
My question is, how do you choose this one? Here is 5. How do you choose this one?
Can I just intervene at this point? I think we've got a serious problem with this policy. At the moment, there's a moderation committee. Now, those 7 that received the bonuses that are listed in this annual report, they refer to the previous year. We have decided that we don't, and we're having a big battle with SAPS. We don't want to follow SAPS's policy. We would rather follow the DPSO policy in terms of performance bonus, which allows you to have a certain amount allocated to performance bonus and to split it amongst 5 people instead of 1 person and 5. So instead of, if there's 5 directors, all of whom have performed well, instead of only 1 director receiving a performance bonus, you split the amount amongst the 5. So each one of the 5 would receive the performance bonus. So we feel that, so we actually have said to SAPS that we are going to follow the DPSA because we actually, as members of the Civilian Secretariat, employed under the DPSA Act and not employed under the SAPS Act. So therefore we have informed them that we will no longer be following their performance thing. Even then though, however, we feel that the way in which the performance processes within government are handled don't really encourage excellence because very often the amount is so small in terms of what you're allowed to allocate. So if you have 5 directors all at the same level and you divide the amount up between 5, it's a really relatively small amount that they receive. However, at least all 5 can receive it if they've performed well. One of the things that we are looking at is, and it's something which we've had discussions with the DPSA, is in addition to the performance bonuses, is also looking at other means of non-monetary rewards for excellence. so that people receive some sort of acknowledgement for performing, and that throughout the year it wouldn't be a one-off process where you do your performance, you've done all your quarterly performance assessments, and at the end you come up with a report and you get your rating. It would be, and it's part of the process to try and encourage staff and to reward excellence in the secretariat, and that's what we are busy working with DPSA on, is an additional to the performance bonus, which is a structured thing that you're allowed to implement, is to look at other ways in which excellence can be rewarded, particularly amongst the lower level staff members for which may not necessarily be monetary. And we haven't yet finalized that, but we would be happy to bring that sort of what we come up with from DPSA to the portfolio committee, because we feel that can really encourage people rather than the way in which things are working at the moment. I don't know if you want to add.
Yes, in addition to what the Secretary said, is we did develop a plan in terms of how we are going to reward the Secretariat members and then the procedure that we are going to follow, because the one that is reflecting on the report is for 8 and 9, but it was paid in 9 and 10. For the current one that was happened in 9 and 10, we are going to pay it in the 10 and 11, and then we are going to follow the DPS procedure where it will be a Category A and a Category B. And then at the end of the day, all the people that really deserve to be rewarded, and then they will be rewarded.
Then ask Mr. Sherman just to add if he wants to anything on the CERA stuff.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. The Secretary has covered most of the points, but just to add that the role players in that process includes the CETA and the Chief State Law Advisors. What happened was the regulations, the draft was finalized, was published for comment. Comments, as the Secretary indicated, was collated. There was a meeting that was scheduled between CETA and ourselves, but because of the unavailability of CETA with regard to the 2010 commitments, and we have communication in that regard, they suggested that we change the date. But subsequently what happened was the copies of the documents, after having been submitted to the State Law Advisor with the comments, State Law Advisor became unavailable because of the heavy commitments, and so that meeting did not take place. But recently we resubmitted a request to CETA for us to follow up, and I had a telephonic conversation, a conversation with a representative of CETA, who indicated that they were not sure as to what their future process would be, and we will follow that up with CETA on the training regulations. But the other aspect related to the training regulations, as indicated by the CETA rep, was the concern about the capacity of the CETA to get involved in the training regulation, because they would be intrinsically involved in the training as well. So that is just the additional points there.
And I'll just ask Mr. Kinnis to...
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. The question about the CSF, is there a difference between the CSF and the CPF? There is a huge difference in that the CPF deal with issues around policing only, and the community safety forums would be dealing with issues in the broader criminal justice system. It would include other departments and the issues that would affect communities that are cross-cutting in the criminal justice system. So with our policy development process, where we are currently is we're going around to the provinces where there are CSFs. We're looking at the different models of the CSFs because it's not all the same. The biggest problem is around mandate and scope and structure. And so those are the areas that we'd be focusing on. We're looking at what's common and what's the role of local government, because local government ought to play a big role in the housing of these CSFs as well. So we've pulled together a committee with a national working group, Chairperson. We've been given a deadline to finish this policy by the end of December. Ourselves and the partnership unit is working hand in hand around the CSFs to finalize this with the national working group. As I already indicated, we have the correctional services representative, justice and constitutional development. We have human settlements. We have social development as part of that particular national working group, as well as, I think, it's government communication service. Then, just here on the publications, we have commenced discussions with UNISA, Professor Anthony Manar, and the publication is Acta Criminologica. We've asked that there be a special edition made available on civilian oversight. and that would include everybody that is doing civilian oversight. The secretariat will be identifying who possible authors could be and what the topics are, and we will probably approach this portfolio committee to also submit the article around the role of Parliament in civilian oversight for that particular edition. So the negotiations will start now, and then we're looking at early next year getting the articles together. On the community police forums, the question was asked about political interference within community police forums. Chairperson, we've indicated that the community police forums nationally is currently housed, or the legislation is housed within the SAPS Act, and we've been engaging processes around reviewing the policy around community police forums, because our experience is that some people use community police forums for their own purposes. When time comes for elections, people take over the chair and they use it to launch their political careers and so forth. Well, there's nothing wrong with that in principle, but of course what we're concerned about is that the CPS doesn't become a launching pad for people that want to use it opportunistically. And so we're looking at the policy of what constitutes a CPS and what are the tasks that they ought to be performing. We had in the past, when CPS was just started in 1995, where even station commissioners used the CPS for their own purposes when they wanted CPS to support their promotion. So that is a big issue. It's not only political interference, it's also ourselves using the CPS. And we have to look at the role of the provincial police board and the national police board. One can ask the question, has the role of the national police board become superfluous? Do we have to work with the provincial board and strengthen them? That would it make it easier for the provinces to work with the structure and for the national secretariat? I think that is it. Okay.
Chairperson, I will start by going through some of the issues that were raised in relation to reservists. First of all, there was an issue raised about a disclaimer. Our understanding is that the disclaimer relates to the point that the reserve service is a volunteer system and there is no remuneration. The regulations, if people get involved in accidents and so on whilst they are working with the police, that aspect in the regulations is covered. The problem happens when they go home, and the reservists have raised this issue that because people know that in some communities we are reservists, and the policy does not cover us when we are at home, and people might attack you and so on, and you are not covered. And there is a lacuna. It's one of the things that when the new policy is developed, we might need to think about how that aspect is covered.
Can you repeat yourself, please?
Chapters. Repeat that. Yes. I'm saying the disclaimer. Right. Oh, yes. The reservists have raised the issue that sometimes they get attacked when they go home because people know that they are working with the police. And in terms of policy, of our subs policy, they are not covered. That's the aspect where they are not covered. And because the policy is now under review, that's the point where we need to say how do we cover that aspect. But currently there is a lacuna there. I'll come to that, Secretary. The applicants, there was also the question asking what are the other reasons for which people have not been accepted. One has been the issue of age. The relaxed criteria accepted that people who'd been reservists for more than 3 years could apply to be enlisted, but they had to be under 40 years of age. So there are a few. I think there were about 3 or 4 people who were not accepted because they were over 40 years. The other issue then, there are people who had been reservists for less than 3 years when this criteria was relaxed, who also applied, and those were also not accepted. The other part of the relaxed criteria was that reservists should have a metric or the equivalent thereof of in terms of experience. And they were required to provide motivations from station commissioners, community leaders, CPFs, and so on and so on. And some reservists couldn't provide that motivation, that they actually had been doing the work in the same manner that someone who would be having a metric was doing it, that they were actually capable of doing the work. So supporting documents were not available for some of them. The other reason was the fitness criteria. Others did not meet the fitness criteria, and then the psychometric test. There were also complaints that did not necessarily relate to one specific person, where in Kokstad, for instance, people had complained that there was corruption, and we referred that to the inspectorate, and were still awaiting the response thereof. And there was also one incident, I can't remember, it's not in this report, but it was just one incident which was resolved. There's this issue in terms of the recruitment, the height of the of applicants. So we requested the police to look at that thing, whether it is constitutional to say someone can't be a police officer. When we went to Alexander Bay, for instance, which is sort of a desert area and so on, and people there are more or less, if you are my height, you are very tall, so it's me and shorter than myself. People said, look, perhaps it could be understandable if you put this criteria for the other part of the country. But first of all, people don't want to come here because it's a desert area. It's difficult. It's difficult to take other people from the country and bring them here. So why here? And those police people, if we are talking about the physical strength that's necessary to do the work of the police, they'll be dealing with us. We are short ourselves. So to say, so it's an issue. And then when we spoke with the people there, they said they would find something for that applicant. And that issue was then resolved, the specific issue. But the issue of height itself still remains. And it applies generally, not just to reservists, but also to people who just apply to become members of the service. And we've raised it to the police that it's a matter that needs to be investigated, whether constitutionally it is sound. Per province, the people who were employed, the numbers of, we've received, chairperson, we should indicate that we've not been able to independently verify these numbers as yet. Because this work relates actually to this to the current financial year, so it's what we're doing now. That is 2009-2010. Eastern Cape, the people who've been employed who were reservists, 388. Free State, 257. Gauteng, 659. KwaZulu-Natal, 337. Limpopo, 318. Mpumalanga, 295. Northwest, 514. Northern Cape, 153. Western Cape, 337. And the numbers for reservists per province, that is in the database, people who are reservists, The Western Cape, it's 5,486. Northern Cape, 2,205. Free State, 3,307. Eastern Cape, 4,389. KZN, 2,427. Mpumalanga, 3,321. Limpopo, 2,425. Gauteng, 8,535. Northwest, 3,576. And at headquarters, 1,150. Headquarters, could I repeat, Chairperson? It's 115. It's not 1,000. The total number is 35,786. Chairperson, we've dealt with the issue of the reservists. Coming to the issue.
Yes. Follow up. If you don't have an answer, then you don't have an answer, but don't keep quiet. My question was, when on duty do these reservists put on uniforms and guns, just like police officers? Sorry.
Yes, Chairperson, they do. They do, but under the regulations, they must be supervised always by a police officer. They cannot operate alone, so the police officer is always there supervising. Chairperson, on issues of stock theft, the question there is, what is the way forward? Chairperson, that question also relates to the issue that has been raised about the imbeciles. What's the impact of this activity? As honourable members would know, obviously everything is very rosy on paper. We sit at head office, we develop mechanisms, we say this is how things will happen. Now, the imbeciles, first of all, help us in this way, that when we go there now to a local community, the real point is to check whether everything that we've put in place actually works. And when we listen to people talking, you suddenly realize that there are gaps. And this also is what is happening with regards to the issue of rural safety. The minister at one point, speaking on the strategic planning workshop of the police, raised the issue and highlighted the issue of the safety of rural communities. The national commissioner agreed to that issue. Now, the point is, again, on paper it looks good. We are all talking good intentions. You go down there, it's not working. Now, what we've done, Chairperson, is to say, what are then the short-term interventions that need to be taken, and what are the long-term ones? In trying to develop short-term interventions, we enlist the help of communities. That is then why we go to those areas and ask them that if you are in our position, what would you want us to do here? There's been a number of suggestions. For instance, people have come up with issues around containers, which would be like manned by about 2 to 3 officers and so on. And in Matatiel, people said those things have assisted to reduce the level of stock theft. However, there are other problems. The attitude of local police officers, others refusing to deploy people into those. And it then helps if we come from the national office, because we can then speak directly to the people responsible for the division at headquarters, and those things could be attended to. The other interventions is what is happening in regard to the farm issues involving AgriSA as well as the unions. 2 weeks ago, we visited Gauteng as well as the Northwest, so that we could try and develop a rural safety program that would involve all stakeholders, that is the government, the police, and then Agri-SA, and also farm workers would then have a role to play in that. In terms of long-term interventions, it's also the consideration, particularly in relation to the border areas, of the implementation of the cabinet decision to redeploy the SNDF to some of the border lines. So that's the issue that we'll also be raising with the minister. The other program is also to ensure that our conversation with these communities is not a once-off thing, that we keep the conversation going so that we can monitor the situation on an ongoing basis. And we could say that in terms of the reports that we've received from some of the areas that we've visited, people have indicated that in some cases, the attitude of the police has improved, and the last report we received is that there were 4 containers that have already been delivered to Matatiel, but those are short-term measures. And also in terms of that conversation aspect, Chairperson, it's the interaction we reported on in terms of between the Eastern Cape and the other provinces to also see if we can't develop a common approach to that problem. Chairperson, the issues of the CPF issues, again, relate to the role that the Imbizos have assisted us to identify the witnesses. Again, one would give an example, Chairperson, of a very minor issue. We visited one area after the incident and spoke with the station commander, who was very enthusiastic to do his work. He said to us, look, if there is a complaint from the public, service delivery complaint, those people must call me. It sounds very practical. But then we highlighted to the station commissioner that you are working in a poverty-stricken area. Some people might not even have the airtime to call you. Some people don't even know how to call you. And then this issue highlights then the role of the CPFs where they functional, because some people then were CPF members said, look, there were cases where community people, if they had problems, service delivery issues, they would raise those things with us. But in terms of our system, when you look at the system, it assumes that the structures are there and are working well. You go down there, the issue is, what if the CPF is not working well? And then we identify the reasons why, the many reasons why CPF don't function. And one of the things that the police themselves raised is this issue of the political dynamic, that we end up getting the most popular candidate being the CPF chairperson. And the most popular candidate is very busy. He's the chairperson of that organization and this other organization. So for us, the point that relates to the safety and security of communities, as well as what the point we're trying to put across to the farming community, is that political context that they're involved in finds expression in how we elect CPF people. But it's something that they should appreciate, that the safety and security aspect is something that all of them should make sure, and it's not good that they contest around that aspect, because it then ends up the most popular person, the very busy person, then the safety and security aspect of the community as a whole, in which that political contest must take place. The community is not as safe as it should be, because we've allowed that the political part to also overflow into the safety and security aspect. It's the issue also in terms of farm communities. We've been saying to farmers, look, some of these criminals might be hiding among your workers. Now, it's because we've allowed the labor issue, which is a natural thing, to also influence our thinking in terms of the safety and security issues, that we all must try and work together to separate those issues, to understand that, yes, there might be labor issues, but those issues must take place within a safe and secure environment. And the response in all communities is positive. So the question becomes now a policy issue, which we then go back to the office and say, if we are to deal with these issues in a policy context, how would we have to address them? And that's the way going forward. But I could say, Chairperson, that it's approximately 1 year in the job. It feels like the job of a paramedic. It's emotionally quite draining. Yes, Chairperson, we've addressed the issue of death grants, the disclaimer, the stock theft. Chairperson, thank you.
A follow-up, please. I appreciate your report that you visited Matatiele, and that is very, very good. I'm putting it to you that we visited the Earth Committee and no go area in KwaZulu-Natal Escort in the recent past. You see, as a committee, when we visit, we bring hopes to the chiefs and the community that this particular portfolio committee was here. So all what I want to say to you is to persuade that is a no-go area. Even the police officers, when I asked them, they could not. They were refusing to go into that area. So it can't be business as usual there. I am saying, please, can you make a follow-up, just like you did with Matatiele, to go into Escort, talk to Inkosi Mole and the communities, so that those interventions you are mentioning now, you could probably provide them. Thanks.
In fact, we, as a portfolio committee, visited Beguzulu. It's an area around the Scott. And in that meeting, they told us that their stock is being stolen by people who reside in the area called Emangwini. And they indicated to us that even police are aware of that area and that their stock is being stolen to that area. But it would seem like they themselves are scared to go to that area. That is now Emangwini, not Bhekuzulu, because we're at Bhekuzulu, but they were describing an area which is called Emangwini, where their stock is being taken to. And it would be that they will come at night riding horses and so on and just take and probably that is why I will agree with Mr. Zimo when he says sometimes it's no longer theft, it's robber, stock robber, and that is something that they were describing, and I think that is what the Honourable Member is trying to emphasize in this meeting, because the Wuzulu community consists of very poor people, and for them to have those cackles, it actually means that a child will go to university as they sell one cackle during at the beginning of the school calendar year. And if that is taken just like that without them getting any cent, it's impacting negatively on them as people there, but also in the future of their children who must actually go to university or wherever out of the income that is generated from that, and I think that is what the member is trying to emphasize in this meeting. Indeed, they told us that police are aware of this Emangwini area, but they just can't go there.
Yes,
just to say that, I mean, I think that we take note of that and the partnership unit will follow it up. But I think that it's a bigger issue than just the few areas that we've been to see. I think, first of all, stock theft, if one looks at the crime stats, has consistently increased. It's also become an increasingly violent crime, where people are now heavily armed when they engage in stock theft. It's not to say that big commercial farmers are not affected, but the people that are often worst affected are small emerging farmers or subsistence farmers that are actually often worst affected when you go out to rural areas. One of the things that we are wanting to prioritize is to get SAPs to pay the necessary focus to stock theft, because it's often an add-on to other things. So you'll list your contact crimes, your aggravated robbery crimes, get all the profile, and stock theft. I mean, and it's not only SAPs, it's even the media. I mean, how many media people, they don't pick up on stock theft increase, but they'll pick up if there's a house robbery increase, it will become a big issue. So it's about trying to make sure that this receives priorities. And one of the things that we're doing is that SAPs have now got their rural safety strategy in place. But it's important for us that we actually go and look at how that is being implemented now in the areas. It's not, and engage and get communities to engage with that strategy to be able to, and that's, and a part of that strategy does also address, obviously, stock theft. But that's one of the things that isn't come up here, because it's something that's arisen out of the work that has been done by the partnership unit in the rural areas, is firstly we need to try and continue putting pressure on for stock theft to be seen as a priority, and secondly, and to recognize that it is becoming an increasingly violent crime. And then secondly, to begin, it's all very well to have this nice rural safety strategy, but for us it's important to go out and see how that is being implemented in the communities and get communities to begin to engage with that strategy. And I think that's been what some of the work that's been doing. So we can focus on Matatiel and Bheki Zulu and all those different areas, but we need to also develop a more holistic approach to this problem.
Thank you very much. I don't know whether members still have follow-up questions. But just on this one, I'm just following up on a case, stock theft related. 55 cattle were stolen by a brother and sold to a commercial big farmer. 55 sold at 17,400. 55. 17,400. If that is not exploitation of the worst order, then give it another name. Give it a name. 17,400. 55 cattle. If I said, okay, I would not want to talk about the fact that the brother claims that it was, they were stolen. But even if you are selling them, this other brother now, 17,455 cattle sold. Case opened, in the process, sold, is it slaughtered, whatever, and they were slaughtered. When the case was on, they went ahead to slaughter. And if you check one of the people who bought these, there is a magistrate involved who says, when I'm at home, I'm myself, and I have the power to buy and sell. And because of that, the case is not going forward. It's just being hidden somewhere, and this poor man is moving from this and is being sent from pillar to post, and so on and so forth. I have a letter, because I wrote this to ask from the department as to what is happening. I have this response. It's saying that 17,455 cases, and there's nothing wrong with that. I can't understand it. Honorable Judge.
No, just the Secretary said that the sub-act will come in the second quarter. There's another important act which we talk about, which is very, very urgent because of what is happening. Even if the report of CIRA indicates that CIRA Act, when is it coming? Because also it's very complicated, especially with the problem that happened when we made the first one.
Chair, there's a bit of a dispute there as to who's responsible for the act, and that's one of the problems. In fact, CIRA went ahead and drafted an amendment to the CIRA Act. So at the moment, we need to resolve that dispute as to who's responsible for the act, because we felt that the Amendment Act was nothing more than just tinkering with the Act rather than what had initially been agreed to was a complete overhaul of the SARA Act. But we were very unhappy with the amendments that were presented by SARA. So that's an issue that has to be resolved as to who is going to be responsible for the SARA Act. Because certainly the amendment that SARA had done, we couldn't support because it was just the tinkering with the Act as opposed to a complete overhaul. So we can't give you a date until that issue is resolved as to who's going to be responsible for the drafting. If we had initially planned that it would come to Parliament in the first session of next year, but now because of this dispute, either SARA will bring the Act in the first quarter of first quarter of next year, or else it will be in the second quarter because we basically stopped work on it because of the dispute.
Does SARA have the capacity to deal with that very complicated Act?
They are appearing before the Portfolio Committee, so we definitely direct that question to them. As a matter of fact, they have not tabled their annual report as we speak. And we are anticipating a meeting with them, hoping that they shall have tabled their report by then, because we can't interact with them if they have not tabled their annual report. We can't interact with a document that has not been tabled to Parliament. We're hoping that they shall have done so by the time they are here before the Portfolio Committee. I think that was one other question they will have to respond to. And on the basis of that, we can decide. But remember, we also can introduce bills. In an event they don't know what to do, we can actually know, we can do it. Let me move towards closing. But you know, I just had one small question. It's very small. Supply chain management, the following shortcomings were identified. A lack of evidence that in some cases three quotations had been obtained for purchases of between $10,000 and $50,000. These are shortcomings. But what were the effects of these shortcomings? And what were the sanctions imposed? What were the effects, if I may just ask before I close?
Chair, some of the staff members that were involved in that had subsequently left. The authorising authority for that had subsequently left the Secretariat when it came to our attention. And ultimately, the final authorising person is the person responsible. So if I authorise that as Secretary, I'm ultimately the person responsible, despite what the subordinates under have done. And the problem with it, in one case there has been, but it's a post-facto, it was not three quotes, it was a post-facto payment where there has been disciplinary action taken against the individual, but in all other cases the people responsible for the final authorization were not with the Secretariat any longer. But I do think that one of the problems is because of the Secretariat being so small, it doesn't get picked up. That sort of thing doesn't get picked up. Either by facts, which is concerning, because we picked this up post. We picked up these things post-facto, and then it becomes quite difficult to deal with it if it's post-facto and the person has already left the department. But at the same time, SAPs who were administering these things should have picked it up there and then, and that's one issue that we have raised with the finance and the administrative section in Program 1 of SAPs. And secondly, we basically have, as I said, tightened up our policy. So that's the two approaches. There's only been one disciplinary case. It hasn't yet been finalised, but there is one disciplinary case pending against the staff member for that. The others were picked up late, and the final authorising person was no longer with the Secretariat.
Thank you very much. As we close, I just want to say we think that you have moved at speed to ensure that this necessary capacity is put in place within the Secretariat, and that is appreciated. But also it is encouraging that you are identifying your needs for yourself, such as you said, monitoring and evaluation unit will need capacitation, finance unit, you said, it will need capacitation as well. That is encouraging. When you appear before the portfolio committee for budget hearings, we will indeed be expecting time frames where applicable, expected outcomes as well as outcomes. As stated by honorable members and the secretary herself, our engagement with the department last week says you have a lot of tasks to perform. I believe that the minister will definitely need short, medium, and long-term factual and progressive advices on some issues ranging from all training to sector policy to quality and quantity of detectives to forensic services to management, particularly at station levels, but not excluding other levels, to asset management and control, to vehicle fleet management, and to some serious concerns around crime intelligence. We also acknowledge the constitutional mandate that any bill may be introduced in the National Assembly by a cabinet member or a deputy minister or a member of the committee of the National Assembly. But it is through parliament committees that those bills must be processed. In fact, they are processed by parliament committees. So if you tell us that these are the legislations that will have to be processed, you must also take into consideration the fact that that affects our program. And if you say within this time period, these are the bills that we think they will be processed, but you do not keep to those time frames, you are actually causing confusion for our program. Let me just cite an example of two bills, the Secretariat Bill and the IP Bill. They came long after the time frame that was set by yourself before the Portfolio Committee. But also, the second issue is that good as we expect you to prioritize bills on the basis of what is important, but remember, we also, as a Portfolio Committee, must have input in that. Or we actually might be having our own priorities in terms of bills. So you need to take note of that. Remember, as members, we can also introduce bills. And indeed, this is constitutional. We are mandated by the Constitution to do that. And therefore, what we are actually saying is that at the beginning of the year, we will have sort of a session where we'll be again looking into our 5-year plan, but also looking into our 1-year plan. And out of that, we'll definitely have to have time frames and not anything that says we're not sure as to who should do what, whether it's a CIRA or Secretariat, but we definitely must know as to who is going to bring what and when so that we can plan accordingly. I'm of the view that the Secretariat is on course and seem to be determined to do things the right way. And that is very clear. It shows in the quality of people that you have appointed to occupy certain positions and to clearly direct this office to what's a direction that all of us will want to see it being in. Your vision and mission are more clearer now. I was actually comparing them with the vision and mission that was presented to the Portfolio Committee just in June last year and the one that is presented to the Portfolio Committee now. I believe this one presented to us is more clear. We said honeymoon is over, and we actually mean that. We will not want to be talking about tickets again next year. We will want to see a report that, as we read, we are able to say these were the targets set, and these were the targets that were met or achieved, and these were the targets that were not achieved. These are the reasons. and your office has the capacity to just do exactly that. I just want to remind members that we are invited by the Portfolio Committee on Correctional Services to its meeting tomorrow, which starts at 9. And the venue, I can't remember, it will be communicated to members. Yes. We will encourage members to attend that meeting. And of course, there is yet another meeting to which we are invited next week by the same committee. They're dealing with just one thing, it's overcrowding, presentations from different entities. Next week, there will be police will also appear before that portfolio committee. And I think it will be important that we also attend. Present there will be justice. I also have some questions to refer to justice. Whilst they might not be maybe in favor of correctional services in addressing overcrowding, but I think if you get a report that says you have a person who is being granted bail 12 times, 15 times, that surely must be of serious concern to the portfolio committee, particularly if it is for serious crimes such as cash heist and so on and so forth. I want to thank you very much for the presentation and for engagement and for being active participants. On Friday, our meeting will start at 9. Our meeting now in the Correctional Services, it will start at 9. We will be meeting CETA. The venue is V227. Thank you very much, and this meeting is adjourned.